Good day and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Man with the Gents Clinic. Six South African male medical doctors on a mission to change the way in which we perceive healthcare. Today we've got a very special guest. Her name is Janine Shamos, and she happens to be a trauma therapist. Let's welcome Janine.
Hi, Janine.
Good to be here.
So tell us, look, I'm sure a lot of our viewers are just tuning in wondering, what is a trauma therapist? What exactly do you do, and how did you get into it?
So I got into trauma because I just believe that people all go through trauma at some point in their lives, mm-hmm. and it does hinder us. It stays in our body. It affects how our body works. It affects how our mind works. It affects how our life works. Mm-hmm. So I got involved 30 years ago. And started in trauma. And through that, I now work very holistically through talk therapy, but also movement, art, activities, just using your own vibe and energy to heal yourself.
And you said you got into it because you feel that all people experience trauma and you felt like you have the ability to at least alleviate some of that trauma. Would you say it's accurate that maybe you faced some sort of trauma in your life that drew you to this work, and you felt you experienced something and you there wasn't anyone there that could help you, and so you've gone on this journey to do so?
Absolutely. I think most of us experience childhood trauma, mm-hmm. That often goes untreated, unseen. It's just like, okay, that's normal. Mm. And that's a dangerous place because as you grow up, for me particularly, I grew up to develop an eating disorder. I'm anorexic. Have been very depressed and suicidal at times, very anxious at times. Developed PTSD at a point. So I think I have the background understanding, but it's just something I'm drawn to, and I know that it can heal. So that's me doing my part.
Okay.
So what types of trauma do you normally see? When I think of trauma, I just think usually like a physical abuse. What other kinds are there?
Well, I mean, even being in a car accident is physical trauma. So maybe what is trauma? You know, is what you're asking. So what trauma are they?
It's a good question. Trauma is anything unexpected that is potentially life-threatening or barrier-threatening. So if I say to you, I'm coming up to you and I'm going to smack you in the face, that's not a trauma. You're expecting it. You know what's going to happen. If I just walk up to you and slap you in the face, different story. And the emotional traumas, you know, very often I'm an only child. And very often children come from backgrounds where potentially a mother or a father figure are domineering. The child is different from how the parents are. I was certainly very different to how my dad thought I should be. My mom was on my side. But that becomes internalized where you think, I don't have a voice. So you shove it inwards. Mm-hmm. Obviously, things like witnessing traumatic events. I think, I know it's like 2024, but I think everyone knows where they were when the towers went down. You know, like we all remember that. And that was a spin-off trauma.
I was 10.
Okay, so you don't.
Yeah, I came back from a grade 4 camp that day.
Oh, wow.
And my parents were going to the TV.
Oh, wow.
So she's right when she says everyone
remember. I was in grade 3. Yeah.
Okay, I'm not going to tell you how old I was or where I was. But, you know, things like that, obviously your domestic traumas, your rapes, your GBV, are quite blatant, you know, car accidents, whatever. But there's very subtle things that if we feel, you know, armed robberies, if no one gets hurt, you kind of go, okay, so you're safe. But someone's entered my space.
Yes.
And I have been violated, so I don't feel safe. Even though I wasn't hurt and no one was hurt, that's still a barrier. And that still becomes a trauma. So it's important to deal with facts when it happens and get the right debriefing so that it doesn't turn into something like PTSD.
How would you advise people to actually, I think it needs to start with recognizing you have a trauma. And I'll just qualify what I'm saying. About 2 years ago, I had attempted hijacking. Okay? You remember, you came to my house after.
Yeah,
okay.
Very traumatic.
Luckily, luckily.
Yeah, you see, this is the South African thing.
Yeah.
There was an unmarked police car, which was a few cars behind, and they saw everything, and they just started shooting at the guys. You know how the police always say they shot at us first?
Yeah.
I can tell you, the muggers don't always shoot first. Those guys were itching. That guy even said to me, I wanted that gun that guy had. I was shooting. I wanted to get it. But anyway, luckily there was the unmarked police car. They intervened and that's safe. However, now when I drive, and it's only in Johannesburg, I'm on high alert at, not even at a stop street or robot, when there's slow moving traffic.
Yeah.
I'm hyper vigilant. There's not a week that goes by where we're at a robot or in slow moving traffic and the doors of a car open. And it's just people getting out, but I get a shock, you know? The worst one was there was a bucky in front of me with guys at the back. And when you stopped at the robot, all the guys jumped off. And I just froze, you know? But it's guys getting off.
Just jumping off.
You know?
But it's a severe traumatic experience.
Would you say that type of, and I think majority of people go through this thing, whether it's with a past thing that happened to them, it doesn't have to be, you know, a hijacking attempt, or it can be sexual abuse, physical abuse. In some way or form, many people go through this. When should you address it? When should you seek help for it? And is it acceptable to live with it the way I'm living, for example? What would you say? Because when I go home to the Eastern Cape, it's chilled, relaxed, no seatbelt.
Not that it's safe.
Not that it's safe. Yeah. Exactly.
You just feel that way because you're out of that environment that the trauma happened in.
Yeah. And I think I'm going to start with your last point first.
Mm.
No, it's not okay to live with your reactions.
Yeah.
Because it hinders. The minute you're sitting somewhere and you feel trapped, your anxiety levels go up, your adrenaline levels go up, your dopamine levels change, your body tenses up. And that's not something we have to live with. That's something that can be dealt with. And not necessarily through medication or talk therapy. Sometimes it is just learning and admitting, this happened, I was affected by it.
Mm.
Let's work through it. And very often, you know, I had a bad car accident and I was taken back to the scene.
Mm.
And I did my kind of debriefing through that because I went right back to where the accident happened. I was hit head on. I was in a coma. And I went back. And some people deal well with that. Some people don't. But getting rid of what's hidden inside you and the hypervigilance and hyperarousal, and you know, you hear a little dunk and your body's like, okay, what's happening? Is a normal reaction, but we don't have to live with that reaction.
Also, like the debriefing is also a very common thing that happens in the medical field, right? So sometimes when there's like a death that happens, like it's unexpected. Sometimes a child can come.
Mm.
You have a resus, and the resus might be unsuccessful.
Mm.
We can late on, like it's actually a traumatic thing if you think about it. Things we see in EDs is actually kind of crazy. You're putting icy drains in people, there's blood all over, gunshots.
Yeah.
Like normal people don't experience this kind of thing. Mm. And sometimes I'll see the faces of the family members who come and see what's happening.
Yes.
They're like, they can't believe what's happening. I've had guys like just faint in the ED when they see what's happened to their friend, right? So it's like getting used to this trauma, and also having debriefing is a thing that happens in ED as well.
It's very important to have debriefing. Mm. And I often think that the first 24 hours, it's important to have immediately reach out to someone and they'll create a safe space. But then 48 hours later or 72 hours later, you should have a proper debrief and a proper deconstruct and we all react to trauma differently. So if someone walks in here and holds us up, we're all going to have different reactions because of our past traumas and because of who we are. I think I worked in prison, and I worked with HIV orphans for many, many years. I still see every single face, you know. I still see every single case. So it is important to recognize that what is normal, what is a normal reaction, and how do you cope with it? And how do you kind of find that space within yourself to just... I do think that's very, very important. And that can be through meditation, that can be through prayer, it can be through just chatting to other people who've gone through that. But it's very important to have it.
I want us to actually get later to obviously managing it. I just wanted to ask another question, and it's going a bit deeper from what Dr. Nassim was mentioning. I wonder, is there really debriefing that goes on with doctors specifically, right? You mentioned there is, but I wonder, is there really? Because think about how we are introduced to the settings that we work in. We just get told, today you are doing your emergency rotation, you're going to be here at this hospital, you're going to be in the trauma pit for the next 2 weeks. And the first night you rock up, there's blood and guts everywhere, there are open chests, there are knives in skulls, and it's just like, whoa, this happened, that happened, right? Then you become a doctor, and like you were saying, that people faint when they see the things you do. But you don't faint.
Yeah.
You don't flinch. You actually act. You're like, I need to act. I need to, you know, get in there and get my hands.
Because it's not traumatic for you anymore.
Yes. Yeah. Now, here's my question. Is it normal, and is it good for it not to be traumatic for you anymore when it's clearly an abnormal setting? And I know it's probably a difficult one because we're professionals. But on a related to people who go through trauma, perhaps abuse, for example, who grow up being abused and sort of come to an acceptance point that this is my life. I'm going to get home, dad's going to clap me across the face, it's over, and I'm going to go to sleep. And this is the norm, and now it's no more traumatic, it's just what I am accustomed to. Is that normal? Is that, should we as doctors, and should the person being abused is accustomed to it, address it and be like, no, this is not normal, you know? Because there are some outcomes. Question. Maybe some doctors commit suicide because of unspoken things.
And we have that a lot. Yeah. And I think it's very important to know that you are still, you are doctors, you are superheroes, and you see stuff that no one else sees. And yes, in that work environment, it's normal. But it's not, you still are affected by what you see. If I go to a crime scene and there's a leg or... you know, something, I'm not going to go, okay, well, I know how to act because that's your training kicking in. But seeing that is still an abnormal situation.
Like police officers, you're mentioning police officers going to crime scenes.
And EMS workers.
EMS workers.
And I don't think that we address that enough in professionals, certainly not with doctors, not EMS, not police, not nurses. I don't think we address that enough at all because it's kind of, it's still the stigma of, oh, you're not okay. Oh, so you can't do this job.
Yeah.
Okay, black mark.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, yes.
In fact, I suffered burnout at work and I was under a lot of stress. I was also studying for an exam because I was told if I don't further my studies, my contract's not going to be renewed. There's other people with more qualified than you that are coming for your job. So I was under a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Late nights, early morning, studying, working. And this was after maybe 2 to 3 years working in this department. Then I suffered this most incredible burnout that I've ever felt in my life. I couldn't sleep. I was up all night. I felt like I was losing my mind. And before I went to my head of department to tell them about it, someone in the department came to me and said, I can see what you're going through. Be careful about what you tell them. They'll accept if you're going through burnout now. They'll give you some time off. But if it affects you for too long, or you don't get over it quick enough, they'll put a black mark over your head, say, this one, we can replace him and get someone else. And so I was very careful about the way in which I approached it to my bosses, knowing that they may have a certain bias because of how they were trained.
Yeah.
We're trained to be like warriors, like soldiers. You go out, you fight, you see whatever you see, and you bury it deep down inside. And if you're not good enough, there's another soldier that'll take your place.
Absolutely. Mm.
So you always feel this kind of fear of, I can't express myself. Mm. I can't say that I'm going through this because we're all going through this.
Yeah.
So why does it affect you more than me? I can also say I'm tired or I can't sleep or whatever. And it was accepting that I've got a problem and that I need help and seeking help. That was liberating for me.
Yes.
Yeah. But I know that there's many people that are trapped because of fear.
Yeah, absolutely. And that fear is real. I mean, the stigma and the bias is there. It exists. And I think for male doctors, I have to say, I mean, for doctors generally, but as males in South Africa, I think we are in a, you know, you guys are expected to always be warriors and always be tough and, you know, big boys don't cry. And that's rubbish. You know, it's absolute rubbish. But it's finding the safe place where you can express how you feel. Mm. And not every place is safe. And I think that's also the reality.
Yes.
Is that you need to find your comfort zone that you feel safe in, that you can let go, unplug, and you know that it stays there. It's not going to go anywhere else. I'm not, you know, for example, I'm not going to make a phone call to your head of department and go, listen, this one's a bit dodgy. Finding that safe space, and sometimes, I think often it isn't in a work setting. I think often it's through a different setting, through family, friends, your favorite coffee shop. You know, I often think that that's the right setting to be in.
Well, it's at the bottom of a bottle on a Friday night with your friends.
Exactly. Exactly. And
or maybe on a Wednesday night, who knows?
Yeah, you know, any night. You know, when you're that burnt out and you know you have to, you do have to keep going, the bottom of the bottle looks really good because it keeps you going. And I think that's also a big issue, and especially amongst doctors, I think you'll know the stats with drug intake and how many doctors become addicted to drugs because it's easy access and they gotta keep going. So at some point we need to say, you know what, what's up? Let's just pull back. Let's create a safe space where you can let go of all of that, and that your answer isn't at the bottom
of a bottle.
Look, we're joking, but I get you know what I mean? 100%.
Yeah. I mean, drug use in doctors is actually rampant. Like, there's an idea of like functional alcoholics, right? People who like have a beer every night just to keep, or a beer before they go to work, just something all the time, just to keep them in a constant state of low buzz, just to help them handle.
Guys, I'm still shocked till today about the pandemic, or let me say epidemic, the local epidemic at our local university, at our local medical school, of use of basically methamphetamine, but Ritalin, Concerta. I was shocked that I found out when I'm already a specialist that people use this thing to study.
Methylphenidate.
Methylphenidate. Yeah. I was just joking to say that it's methamphetamine, but it's
a stimulant, essentially, to treat ADHD.
I mean, the amount
of... So you've never used it?
No.
To study...
I was preparing for my final specialist exams, and that's when I was introduced to say, like, hey, why don't you do this? I was like, what? No ways. And then the guy was like, but... our whole class used
but
this.
Everyone does
school.
It.
I was like, what?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I got through med school on water and dragon.
And coffee.
Yeah, listen, thank goodness you for know? That. So this
you, Ness, you never ever used Ritalin?
I never used it.
You've never?
I used it once. I used it once in fourth year. I'll tell you, I was writing, I think, our neurology final exams in fourth year. And someone it is, who you know very well, he offered me and he said, look, if you want to study and you need to ace this exam, use this. That feeling that I got when I took it was so scary to me that I was like, if I keep taking this, I will become addicted to
it. Yeah.
The feeling of such intense focus, I'd never experienced that level of intense focus in my life. No matter how interesting the subject matter was, I would never be able to focus that hard.
Mm.
And I was there locked in. I was focused 3-4 hours, toilet break. Even on the toilet, I'm like, focus, focus, come back, focus, focus. I think I studied for maybe 10 hours straight. With minimal breaks, no food, nothing. And I was like, if I keep going like this, it's going to be problematic. Yeah. I will become addicted to this.
And all those drugs have a high risk of having associated anxiety. So you end up having anxiety, low level of feeling anxious and nervous while you're constant, on those drugs.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's what we're coming to is that professionals, and not just doctors, police officers, like you said, firefighters in places where there's a lot of fires. I don't know if there's lots of fires. Yeah,
constantly, I think. Well, you know, probably not as bad as where you're from.
In the Western Cape, eh? Yeah. But people are using substances, you know, and there's something below or beneath that that they are putting a plaster over by using those substances. And that's what we need to get to, you know. Yeah, I mean, there's many stories that we can can talk about.
But I mean, what's your experience with substance abuse, mental health, trauma, that type of thing? What do you think the causes of the substance abuse are? Do you think that a lot of people have underlying mental health issues and then they use a substance to treat it? Or do you feel like they get the mental health issue and then later are just using to try and cope? Or like, what's your experience?
It's a dual issue. Sorry.
So can you use substances in your recovery as well? I think just to add on to what he's asking.
You know, I think it's quite a broad spectrum because we know that people who suffer from anxiety or depression, people self-medicate because they don't want to go to a doctor. They're ashamed to tell their parents. So, yeah, I'm a bit socially anxious, but all my friends are having a beer, so okay, I'll have one. Oh, I suddenly feel much more relaxed. So it's a pleasurable relief, but then it becomes that crutch where if I don't have it, I can't function. And obviously your higher level drugs and I mean, a friend of mine was a functional alcoholic. Whiskey in the morning, glass of whiskey at night, and then throughout the day. And he was highly functional. But, you know, it becomes that point where if you are that, I don't want to say addicted necessarily,
dependent
on substances, then we need to keep that in mind because withdrawing it completely can be very, very dangerous. Heroin, like drugs are like that, it's, you know, the detox can be very tricky depending how long you've been on this. Same with substances like drinking, and the same with smoking. You know, I think there's an amazing, I don't know, thing at the moment where the vape shops actually have nicotine levels that you can start lowering. And you keep your vape, so it's
I've
the habit
seen that,
but you cut down on the nicotine, which is incredible. Not that, you know, vaping's necessarily a good thing, but if someone's that addicted and has that crutch so much, it's very, very important. And I think we need to look at mental health is a broad spectrum. We are not mentally unhealthy or mentally healthy. We're all on the swing. There are days when we feel much more able to cope and days when we're much more down. You know, all of us are in that teeter-totter. And I think it's very important for us to remember that, that it's not just, oh, you are crazy or you are dysfunctional. You are in that point. It's all of us. Everybody is part of that continuum at all points.
Because, I mean, you know, when we think of substance, and I always say this, people use substance. I think people don't realize that substance use is far more common than we think. Substance abuse and addiction is far less than the number of people using. I think about how many people drink and then how many people become alcoholics. The numbers
Are massive.
I mean, a massive gap. only a very small proportion of people. And that's telling because it tells us one thing, that not everybody that drinks is going to become an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Not everybody that drinks on it is going to use it as a crutch.
Yeah.
Those who do abuse it definitely have something wrong that's happening in their lives.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, to use a non-medical term, you know, there are people who have more addictive personalities.
Yeah.
We know that, you know, if you've got a history of substance abuse in your family, you are far more likely to become an abuser rather than a substance user.
Yeah.
We know that with depression, there's a family dynamic as well, never mind DNA or genetics. But if you have a mother who suffers from depression and her answer is, you know, when she gets depressed, it's grab the bottle, slam the door and go, leave me alone. What coping skills are you learning?
Mm-hmm.
If you're coming from a home where your dad's solution after a long week is to have a couple of beers and go out with his friends, that's the coping skills you're learning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a, you know, complicated thing. And I think for people to understand, is this something that I'm used to, that I was brought up with? Or is it something that I've chosen? And am I happy this way? A friend of mine was on the golf circuits. He literally got kicked off because he drank himself out of it, out of pro golf. And he joined AA, and he's perfectly clean, and he's just won a big golf tournament a professional. Awesome. You know, so it is doable.
Yeah. But I mean, Tiger Woods had a similar...
Exactly. Yes.
When he went on a rampage and was having affairs with hundreds of women, yeah. And then...
And that's, again, symptomatic.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, there were... I don't know how many women came out saying, yeah, we've had affairs with him while he was in his marriage, and then that caused a breakdown, and then because of that, he went on, like, drinking sprees, and he was, you know, caught by the police, and he went through all those cases. So it can happen to anyone.
Yeah.
Exactly.
People think that it's only something of the poor, you know?
No.
We see guys begging at the street corner and often assume drugs is the problem.
Yeah.
And this guy's a drug addict, and that's why he's in the street.
Mm.
But maybe, you know, you don't realize that your doctor treating you that same day is a functional addict.
I would actually probably support anecdotally that depression and anxiety and PTSDs are more in people of upper class and more affluent. That's just obviously not supported by evidence, you know, but I'm just saying anecdotally. So we should change our mindsets and not think that these things are just for people who don't haves, you know.
Yeah.
Or it's not the case. It's why you'll find like a specialist cardiologist who's the dean of the faculty commit suicide. Mm. You know, and you just don't understand. But this guy had everything. He was the most smart guy. He's at the top of the university, and he commits suicide.
Yeah.
I wanted to get to PTSD because that's actually the disorder that comes out of trauma.
Yes.
Like you said, we all experience trauma, and I gave you the example of myself. Obviously, because I know the diagnosis of PTSD, I don't think I have PTSD. But I still have trauma responses.
Yes.
So.
The hypervigilance.
Yeah.
Yes.
Always looking. Yeah.
I mean, PTSD, part of the criteria is also hypervigilance. Mm. So I'm tracking there.
Keep it
tracked.
Yeah. I need to watch myself. But people out there might be wondering. So there's two aspects. Some people just throw out the word PTSD and it's like, I have PTSD. Don't say that.
People will walk out of an exam and go like, oh, I got PTSD from that exam.
Yeah.
Or, you know, girls would use it on their boyfriend. Yeah, you're triggering my PTSD. Yeah. Leave me alone. But then there's also the other side of people living in trauma experiences who don't realize they have PTSD. Mm. So maybe if we can just explain, you know, what PTSD is and when you should actually seek help seriously.
So I think importantly is to understand that after a trauma, there are certain things that are perfectly normal.
Mm.
And for at least 2 weeks, it's perfectly normal to jump at every sound, to freak out at every noise, to be very tense, to be very hypervigilant. It's perfectly normal. That is your body. I always say it's like having an elastic band that you've kind of pulled. It needs to slowly go back in. You know, if you just let it go,
it's going to hurt you.
Wink. Mm. You know, well, if it's me, it'll hit me in my face. So, you know, you need to let it go and you need to let your body let that go. But if you've been suffering from the same levels for longer than 2 weeks, or if you find them increasing after like a couple of weeks and after 3, 4, 5 weeks and you're thinking, okay, this happened in October, it's December, I'm freaking out even more, I find I'm more tense. That is your sign that we've gone out of the realm of a perfectly normal response to something that is more of a disorder.
Yeah.
I think in South Africa, we very much deal with complex trauma in this country. And I think we have kind of, you know, as we said earlier, you go, oh, well, it's fine. At least she wasn't raped.
Yes.
You know? Oh, but, you know, I was held at gunpoint, but I'm fine. They didn't hurt anybody. And we minimize how important those traumas are.
Mm.
We kind of like, we go, okay, well, that's normal. It's not normal. It's absolutely not normal. Mm. And I think we need to become more aware of that, that, you know, the words we use and the way we I mean, the word trigger has been overused for everything. And yes, it's appropriate.
Yeah, it's a psychological buzzword now.
Yes, and it's become you triggering am I.
Yeah.
Like, can we remember what that means?
Yes, yes.
And I think we need to remember that all our senses are triggered.
Hmm.
It's normal to be to have your senses triggered.
Absolutely. Yeah. After my car accident, I still don't wear one brand of perfume because I was wearing that perfume.
Wow.
When the taxi hit me, I cannot have it near me.
But also, along with PTSD, is also generalized anxiety disorder.
Yes.
Yes.
So generalized anxiety disorder would be like you don't. There's no specific source.
Mm.
So you mentioned like these complex traumas. Sometimes we have trauma, we don't even know that it's like a trauma. Exactly. Something like it's like you think it's normal, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
And then you end up having this anxiety. You don't know where it's coming from. Why do I have this all the time? I'm anxious. And just no like location to it. That's generalized anxiety disorder. Like
with the PTSD.
With PTSD.
That and I think that becomes a very real issue.
Yeah.
Where for a lot of people who are always anxious, who've been diagnosed or undiagnosed as just anxious people and generalized anxiety, and you drive down a street with big trees and you're going from light to shade, that can trigger panic attacks, that can trigger anxiety attacks. Mm. There may very well be something within the childhood that has actually triggered that. That has caused that. There's a lot that happens in childhood that we kind of go, you know, it's like that happened.
And part of psychiatry history taking is like to start at childhood.
Yes.
So you
get
deep, deep history taking. You go through all the things, your adolescent, your childhood, your all that stuff.
You know, and that definitely triggers.
I have a bit of probably a difficult one. Last week we spoke to a social worker who's also a sexual health worker. And our colleague, Dr. Vilakazi in Nhlanhla, he's mentioned how scared he is, you know, for the future of his kids.
Mm.
Because they were sort of promoting, this is off topic, but they were saying that porn is healthy, for example. Mm. And he's like, he's against that. Because even though you might say watch it in a good way, the whole world and technology and social media and AI is driven to make sure that your child sees the wrong thing and is gripped in by the negative.
Addicted. So, I mean, they literally, the guys that develop social media at the top, Instagram, they have an entire team.
Agenda.
How can we make this thing more addictive?
Yeah.
Yes.
How can we pull you in? How can we get you to stay on the app for as long as possible?
So my question is now relating to what you're talking about. You mentioning our children. And I'm worried about, because I also have children. How do we keep our children away from experiencing these things? Or should we just say that your child is going to pick up 1, 2, or 3 traumas By the time they're an adult, you just need to deal with them the right way. Or is there a way to say that I can raise my child with no traumas? Because now, why do I have kids now? Because I'm raising them to have traumas, yeah. And I don't want my kids to have traumas. You know, I want my kids to grow up in a utopia, happy world, happy family. So it's probably a rhetorical question, but is there hope? Is there, how do we do this? Or must we just expect a trauma or two
and
or
accept
three?
That that's and just accept the reality that that's
going
to happen.
And see how we work on it in the future.
So I'll tell you exactly, that's why I have 14 cats and 3 dogs. Okay. And no humans, because of exactly that. I think we need to remember that all parents, and I do think most teachers, try and raise children and teach children in the best way possible and try and shield them from trauma. The world just isn't that nice. So I do think parental controls on social media are important. I do think, you know, and for adults as well, I've seen it because I follow crime and it's my job, so you know, that's what I do. And the more you follow, the more you find. And just changing your kind of what you follow. Start following, I'm following a Buddhist site at the moment, so every day I'm getting bombarded with these beautiful messages. And it changes the algorithms. So I think to teach our kids, you know, if you've got teenagers and they're on Instagram, lead them towards the teen talks. Because there's these teens who can talk back to them. And I think the best advice that I have is really my mom's advice, well, how my mom raised me. I watched everything. I did everything, and my mom would be sitting next to me, and she goes, right, this is real. I was a child during the major Ethiopian famine, and I'd sit and watch the news, and my mom would be like, this is real. These are real people. This is what we can do. Versus a movie, this is just a character. It's not real.
Yeah.
It's not based in reality. So my mom gave me that so I could identify the difference between real and not real and fantasy and and everything.
And that famine is also like a picture of like a, I still remember also because it's like a traumatic image.
You Ethiopian. Yeah. So, it's so there's like close
a, there's,
to
a,
you,
there's an image of a child, right? Starving, malnourished, crouching, right? You can see that. Proper all signs of malnutrition. There's like a vulture.
Yes, that famous picture. That is Ethiopian.
The vulture waiting to eat the child.
Waiting to eat the child.
Yeah.
A friend of mine took that photo.
Didn't seriously? Didn't he commit suicide?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, shame, man.
Yeah.
Because everyone said, like, you just sat there and watched.
Because, or was it because of the trauma he experienced there?
He had just seen so much trauma. He was in Ethiopia, Sudan. He covered the 82 riots. Incredible photographer, incredible human being.
I read about him.
But it is that, and I think doctors have that as well. Like, you just let it happen. You just sat there.
Yeah.
I mean, like, and people don't realize there's certain rules that govern what we're allowed to do and how we're allowed to intervene. So for him, it just got... It just got too much. He couldn't deal with it anymore.
I just want to make this point before I forget it. You mentioned, we spoke about how he was so highly seen and lauded for his amazing camera work and the person he was. I mentioned the doctor who unalived himself, even though he was like a super specialist and head of the university.
Yeah, of UCT.
And so celebrated, right? And doctors are celebrated. Yes. When we walk around, people... You know, you might have treated someone and they see you in the mall and it's like, but I think what we struggle and what hurts us the most is when the people we hope for pride from or lording from or appreciation from don't give it to us. So when you feel like the person who's supposed to be closest to you doesn't hold you to that same regard as what the rest of the world does.
Yeah.
it hurts you.
It does.
And when they and that's the person who's breaking you down.
Yeah.
And the rest of the world sees like this amazing person, this amazing doctor, but the people who he wants to feel appreciated by most and not be hurt by the most are doing the hurting. I think we should also look at that and think to ourselves, you know, we need to be aware of this. And I don't even know how to word what I'm saying, but I hope that people out there understand, you know, whether it's your partners, your siblings, your parents, your aunts, your mentor, you know, look after each other. Because if I crave love and intimacy and appreciation from you, and I'm vulnerable with you, and I tell you things that no one else knows, and then you use them against me.
Exactly.
It doesn't care how many accolades I have, and if I'm the dean of Harvard University, yeah. I'm going to kill myself, you know?
And I think that's a very real issue, is that the world kind of does this, and the people closest to us, our families, personally, honestly, my husband's a golfer. Okay, he doesn't get what I do.
Yes.
He doesn't understand what I see and what I do. And I think that's what we all need, is someone to see us, real us, the inside us. And not just what we do, but how
it's not a new thing we respond. I'm just thinking now, you mentioned about Buddha. I'm a Christian. And Jesus Christ was rejected by his own people. Mm. And he said that foxes have holes, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head, because he was rejected by his people. Yeah. But foxes have holes that they keep warm in at night. Yeah. So it's a lesson from that, you know, even Jesus Christ was rejected by his own people. And so that's what continues today in society.
And there's also an interesting observation also. Like, you'll see how, like, a lot of doctors, right? Like, we all start with sciences, we learn biology and all of that, right? Those guys who do physics, chemistry, and all those other, like, lab work, they tend to be more atheist, right?
Mm. Mm.
But doctors, once they become medicine, and once they finish grad and graduate, and once they start working in the real world, they all become super religious. Like, you see a lot of pastors are also doctors.
Yes, true.
So I think maybe, I don't know, I can't say like it's a coping mechanism, but it's an explanation for the suffering.
True.
It's an explanation to see what's happening, right?
Yes, yes.
So what are the coping mechanisms or the way that you use to try and help people with PTSD and GAD?
Traumas.
So I just want to raise that issue, is we very often need to feel like we're in a safe space ourselves, personally, to do what we're doing.
Mm.
And I think that's where religion or faith comes in very strongly. And I think that's a good thing. Ritual is very important, whether it's going to church, going to mosque, going to shul, going to temple. It's, you know, having a faith-based spirit is very important. For me, it's sitting under a full moon. I'm a moon baby.
It's full moon right now.
Yes, I know. See,
we
I'm
need
twitching.
To get you, you need to get out of here as soon as possible.
Yeah.
I'm going to go howl now. But I think coping mechanisms is to look at people, find your natural safe space. So for me, as I said, I've got 14 cats. The purring of a cat is the best thing in the whole wide world.
For you.
For me.
Yeah.
Not for everybody, but for me.
Yeah.
And that's my go-to. I'm very tactile. So I have things in my house that I can hold on to. Smell is very, very important to me. So I have diffusers, and I have bells, and I have all these things that are calm to me. Mm. So if I'm feeling stressed, that's my space. Mm. We have a completely separate gym in our house that is a different kind of space, safe place. Because if I need to get active and I'm angry, let's get it out. But to recognize within yourselves what is triggering you, what is your main reaction, and what senses do you most relate to?
Mm.
What is your calm space? Sitting in a car, in your driveway, locked, is sometimes the only safe place you have, because you're coming back from work.
Yeah.
And you know you're going to open that front door and it's daddy, daddy, or honey, please, or whatever. No,
that's my ritual. I sit in the car for at least 15 minutes when I get home.
And I do that routinely. Yeah. I feel safe there. So finding that, it's a silly little thing, but finding those little things, having a cup of moon milk before bed, having a hot bath, that works for people. Mm-hmm. Use it.
Like men use like a man cave is what they call it.
Yes.
It's the place where they want to just go and chill by themselves. Mm.
And I think that's important, you know, that my husband has his little man cave. I have my girly girl cave. Mm. And, you know, the cat cave. You know, and it's recognizing also how am I feeling in this moment.
Yeah.
Mm.
Maybe, you know, I usually like a bubble bath. Tonight, I'm not feeling it. This is what I need. So to recognize it within yourself and trust yourself. You know what you're doing.
Mm. How do you help others? What sort of therapies do you provide?
Maybe some alternative, management or methods you use. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, other than the standard. So we know obviously the standard talk therapy, medication, like psychologists or medication.
But sort of the alternative interventions.
You did mention to us before we...
Yeah, I'm very holistic. So yes, talk therapy has its place, but not often. I mean, not all the time.
Mm.
You know, there's a space for that. But sometimes just chatting to someone under a big tree is a lot safer and more relaxing. Doing grounding exercises with people, you know, sit on the ground, feel the grass, feel your tailbone. Meditation lets you scent. Let's use movement, so yoga movements or just free movement. I do a lot of that. I put music on and just move the way your body takes you. Just move it. And you find that unclogging of trauma because our bodies store it. Going to sound really weird, but coloring in.
Mm. It's almost like a childlike activity.
Yes. Yeah. And I honestly thank you for everyone for like making adult coloring books, but I still prefer the kids' ones because you're actually going back to childhood.
Yeah.
And it's, you don't have to color in the lines if you don't want to color wherever you want.
It's actually very therapeutic. Now that I have a daughter who's at that age, I color with her. It's actually nice.
It is.
To be, and I follow the line. I'm like, hey, this is nice. I'm following the line.
Exactly. And stuff like that, you know, having certain rituals, I think a lot of us don't do a waking up, going to bed ritual, if that makes sense. Mm. So you wake up, your alarm goes off, you go, ugh, and you drag yourself where you need to go. You come home and you go, ugh, and go back to sleep, you know? I think having that ritual where in the morning I have a cup of coffee or tea first, I sit in the sunlight first. At night, I come home, I have I'm a firm believer of moon milk, which is heated milk with different spices and different, you know, that calm you. Mm. If you're into bubble bars and that kind of thing. But have that ritual that closes off your day, I think is very, very important.
Thank you so much, Janine. I really appreciate you coming and sharing this with us. Just finally... where can we find you? What resources are there available for anyone that is suffering with some sort of trauma and they need an outlet?
So, I mean, there are big places like SADAG. Mm. They have a 24-hour line, so it's 0800-567-567, nice and easy to remember.
Mm-hmm.
People are more than welcome to contact me via WhatsApp or email. Mm-hmm. My WhatsApp is 0823389666. If they've got questions, if they want to go to workshops, anything like that, I'm more than happy to chat to people. And there are resources within your communities that I know the stigma again. Sometimes you want to go outside of your community. So, and that's where resources like SADAG come in. It's, you can be totally anonymous. They will refer you to a support group. We have them across the country. So it's a nice place to... Sometimes you don't want to be in community. So finding a place to chat or finding a safe space, coffee shops, really good resources.
Under the full moon.
Yeah. And under a tree with, you know, not looking into the bottom of a bottle all the time. But exercise is very important. You and know, my trainers are awesome.
Next week we have a bodybuilder on the...
So. Can I come?
Yeah. No, you definitely can. I know which type you're talking about.
We can come. I'm very into my boxing and pole. I'm a ballet dancer. So.
Nah, awesome. But let's not keep you from your full moon.
Yeah.
Thank you once again for joining us for this episode. We found it really enlightening. And thank you all for watching. Please like, share, subscribe to our channel, Let's Talk Man. And come and see us at the Gents Clinic if you're having any issues, and we can refer you to the relevant person that can help you if you are in need of help. So that's been us. Another episode of Let's Talk Man with the Gents Clinic. My name is Dr. Sil Essa, signing off.
Dr. Brendan Matthews.
Dr. Naseem Sharif.
And me, Janine.
Thank you,
Janine. Thank you. See you guys next week.